Good morning. And also let me greet those who are watching us live stream today. We are so glad that you're taking part in our worship service. And it's also good to know that the service is usually posted by the afternoon today or even tomorrow for those who might want to watch a service again or go back and look at a service that they haven't seen in the past. Now, just as a reminder, our message series is based on Bishop Reuben Job's book, The Three Simple Rules. We have a copy for every family. It's free. And if you haven't picked one up yet, they're on a table right out in the rotunda. We hope you'll pick that up. Also, today you should have received it's like a business card, and it has, it's what we would call the general rules for Methodism. And it's the same thing that's on this card. Now, that little card, I want you to put that in your wallet or your purse. And when you have the opportunity, I want you to share that with somebody later. Now, you'll understand why as we go through the message today. During the sermon, you're going to need this card with you. So just have this handy, and we're going to be referring to it a couple of different times. Well, the other evening, I'd gone on home from the church office here and was doing whatever I was doing and realized that I had forgotten a book at the office that I needed. And so I asked Melissa if she would like to go for the ride and drive with me down to the office. And she said, sure, she'd be glad to. And could we take her car? Well, of course we can take your car, because it needs filled up with gas. So, of course we can do that. So we drove her car up to the BP at 132nd and Maple, and started filling up the car. And I noticed, just kind of over to the right, maybe 15, 20 feet away, there was a man under a minivan. He, under the back end of it, he was clear up there. You couldn't see his face or his torso at all. Just his legs were sticking out. And he was underneath this minivan, and I could hear him just hitting something really hard, just whacking away what turned out to be his spare tire. He's under there on his back, smacking this thing, and I thought, what in the world? Well, I looked a little closer and noticed that he had a flat tire, and so I figured he must be hitting his spare tire with the lug wrench. Well, it's not unusual to see a flat tire, but I'd never seen anybody do that before, so I just kind of looked at it and kept on filling up the car with gas and washed the windshield, checked the oil, that sort of thing. And all the time that's going on, you can hear this man whacking away at this spare tire. And all the time this is going on, people were coming and going to the gas, getting gas, and people were walking in and out of the BP. And then literally just 5 feet away from this man who was struggling with his spare tire and losing were four young men. And they all looked like they were pretty strong guys. And they were standing 5 feet away, kind of leaning up against their car. They had been working that day. And they all had, you know, Coca-Cola or something like that, a cold beverage. And they were just relaxing after a long, hard day at work. But there they were. Everybody seemed to be oblivious to this man struggling against this spare tire. Well, I finished what I was doing, got back in the car, and I said to Melissa, you know, look at that guy over there. He's doing battle with his car. He doesn't realize, but he's doing this wrong. That's always helpful, isn't it? He's doing it wrong. He doesn't seem to know that in that kind of car, you know, most cars with hatchbacks like minivans and SUVs, there's a little spot, it looks like a nut, that's hidden. And you lower your spare tire with your lug wrench. You put it in this nut and you spin it and it lowers it to the ground. And I said, I bet that man doesn't know that's how that works. And I wondered out loud to Melissa, you know, I wonder if I should help that guy. Well, as I wondered about whether I should help him or not, the scripture for today just kind of popped into my head. Jesus said, I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, and do to others as you would have them do to you. That's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, I got to say about this teaching of Jesus, I don't mind the idea of doing good to those who are willing to help me, or at least doing good to those who are no threat to me, and as long as I have the time, of course. But Jesus' words in this passage and this second general rule to do good seem a bit much. Is this rule for real? I mean, what are the boundaries to doing good? How far do you take this? You see, I like having a golden rule sort of thing on my bumper, on a bumper sticker. But when that bumper sticker insists on becoming part of my life and really living it out, that's a completely different matter. And Bishop Job will admit right up front in his little book that doing good, the second rule, is tough. He said this, just when we thought we were ready to buy into the idea of doing no harm to anyone or anything, we are now faced with a more difficult task. And that choice is to do good, all the good we can, regardless of who the person is. You know, that kind of seems impossible. Do all the good we can? I mean, really? Do all the good we can? I don't know. Sounds impossible. And yet, I do admit it has that kind of crystal clear ring of truth. And it certainly sounds like something Jesus would say. Not only do unto others, we know Jesus said that, but to do good, well, apparently Jesus said that too. And then our United Methodist heritage adds an exclamation point to this thing from Jesus. Now take out your postcard. We're going to read this part of it. This kind of falls under the heading in our heritage as a general rule. This sort of idea here is something that's supposed to guide how we live as Christians. So I want you to read this with me, all right? So get your card out. Here we go. Do all the good by all the means, in all the places, to all the people, as long as ever you can. Seriously? Did you just listen to what you said? Do all the good by all the means, in all the ways, in all the places, to all the people, really? All the people as long as ever you can? Does Jesus really mean this? Does John Wesley really intend for us to take this seriously? Well, Bishop Job thinks so. In fact, Bishop Job says, do good is the universal command. He said it's not limited to those who like me or to those who are like me. And he admits that actually doing this for real is harder than hard. He said, of course, this is a challenging way to live. To love God with my whole heart and my neighbor as much as I love myself was never declared to be easy, but it was declared to be essential to our spiritual life, our life of faith, and our life with God. You know, it all sounds kind of well and good, but really it doesn't sound that great. I mean, Bishop Job was right. If we really pay attention to this, this is a challenging way to live. It's a challenging way to live for a couple of reasons. First, you see, I have objections to doing all the good I can. I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't really want to do good to those who are mean to me. Or at least not till they apologize. And what if somebody rejects my attempt to do good for them? Well, then I'd be humiliated. My motives might be misunderstood, and then I'd get embarrassed. Or I might do someone a good turn, and then they don't even acknowledge me. And then I'd get a bit angry. And someone might take advantage of my goodness and expect me to keep on helping them, and then I'd feel used. And what happens if accidentally I help somebody who doesn't deserve it? And it might be the case that I don't really like that person at all, let alone love them. I mean, there are times when it's hard to love your neighbor. Have you ever had a neighbor that was hard for you to love? I hope you haven't been that kind of neighbor, but you probably have been at least once in your life. At times when it's hard to love your neighbor, whether it's the person living next door or the gal in the next cubicle to yours or the person you sit with at church. There are times when it's hard to love your neighbor. We all have those times. So I'd like you to think, you know, get out your card again. There's only one fill in the blank this week, and here it is. I find it hard to love my neighbor when? Now just be honest with God. I'm not going to ask you to answer this out loud. That'd be too much like confessional, I'm afraid. I find it hard to love my neighbor when? I want you to just take a minute. I'm going to give you a moment right now and be honest with yourself and be honest to God. Just write down in a few words, when do you find it hard to love your neighbor? I'm going to give you a few minutes right now. Just think about that and write it down. Now, it might be that later on today you need to do some praying about that. Well, I have objections to do all the good you can stuff. And second, you know what? And this is really the crux of it for me. This is a challenging way to live because as it now stands, I don't have the time to do one more thing. How can I manage to cram doing all the good you can in all the places I can when all my places already feel crowded to overflowing? And where do I find the energy? Where do I find the energy to do all the good to all the people I can when it already feels like my energy is used up at work and home? I just don't see how I'm supposed to fit in doing more good into my already too busy life. Well, I've thought about this, and I've been praying on it, and it struck me that if I'm not careful, and my guess is this is the case for you too at times, if I'm not careful, I can reduce my Christian faith into a religious to-do list. If we're not careful, we can reduce our relationship with Christ to a to-do list filled with religious-sounding stuff. Maybe a to-do list like this. Well, my list says, go to church. Well, I'm here today, check. I got that one done. Help out in Sunday school. Well, you say, I don't know about that one. By the way, we need help with Sunday school. So after you're done here today, you just are sure to stop across the rotunda and help out. Sarah says, woot, woot. We need some help. My religious to-do list. Attend my committee meeting. Go to Bible study. Check. Volunteer at the food bank. I can do that. Check. But if I think of my religious faith, my faith in Jesus Christ, as really not much more than a religious to-do list, then I'm going to see this second rule as nothing more than adding a bunch more items to my already too crowded list. And that doesn't seem quite right. I just don't see how I can do all the good you can. I just don't see how I can add more stuff to the list. Now, as I thought about this, I remember the story of the Apostle Peter meeting with a Roman warrior named Cornelius. Cornelius was a Gentile. He worshipped God, but he wanted to know about Jesus. He had heard about Jesus, wanted to know about him, and so he called and asked Peter if Peter would come tell him. And so Peter meets with Cornelius and kind of gives him a thumbnail sketch of the life of Jesus, told him a bit about who Jesus was. And this is from Acts chapter 10, verses 36 through 38. This is what Peter says to Cornelius. You know the message God sent to the people of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ. He is Lord of all. God anointed Jesus with the Holy Spirit and with power. Jesus went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. And let me highlight that last sentence describing the thumbnail sketch of Jesus' life. Jesus went about doing good. for God was with them. Now, I just want you to repeat this phrase by phrase after me, would you? Jesus went about doing good. For God was with him. Jesus went about doing good. That sounds a little casual, if you ask me. I mean, going about is kind of a haphazard way to live. Just going about. I was just going about my daily business. That just means I'm just kind of drifting along. Sounds that way to me anyway. Sounds a little casual. Jesus was just going about doing good. In a sense, it kind of does sound that way. In a sense, it is true. It does sound a bit haphazard. See, Jesus didn't begin his day with his to-do list. I mean, I know I do. I don't think, but can you imagine what that would have been like? You can imagine Jesus sitting at his desk, swiveling around in his chair, and he picks up his quill, and he's got a piece of papyrus sitting there, and it's blank, and he's thinking about what he should do that day. And so, can you just imagine Jesus sitting down and thinking, okay, well, oh, I know what I'll do today. I'll calm a storm. He writes it down. You know, I think this would be a good day to raise Lazarus from the dead, so he adds that to his to-do list. And then he thinks out loud to himself, you know, I haven't called a Pharisee a hypocrite in a while. Can't let standards drop. It's on the list. Call a Pharisee hypocrite. All right. Feed the multitudes. Well, that sounds like I can do that today. Puts it on the list. Tell a Samaritan all about her life and then prove that I really know all about her. Put that on the list. Oh, wait, he said, no, strike that one. I did that last week. We don't need to do that one again. Can you imagine Jesus having a to-do list like we do? Now, he didn't have a to-do list. But going about doing good wasn't really haphazard either. Instead, I want you to catch this. Instead, Jesus responded to opportunities that came his way to do good. I want you to hear that again. I mean, how did Jesus live out his life? Jesus responded to opportunities that came his way to do life, to do good. Now, Jesus, he was kind of in the business there at first, you know, of gathering disciples. That's what he was really about. He'd go out in the day to teach, to gather disciples around him. But as he was going about his business of gathering disciples, his eyes and his ears were always open. You could see his eyes scanning crowds and marketplaces, shorelines, and even out to fishing boats. Jesus watching and listening for opportunities to do good. Jesus was aware and he was responsive. Jesus responded to opportunities that came his way to do good. So one morning, Jesus didn't set out to heal a leper, but when a leper asked for help, Jesus restored him back to the community of faith. Jesus didn't set out one afternoon to feed the 5,000, but when he saw the mass of people who are hungry and weary and bone tired, and he looked at them and he said to himself, these folks look like they're sheep without a shepherd. His heart was touched. He saw need, and he responded to it, and he fed them. Healing Peter's mother-in-law wasn't on his list to do that day. But when Peter told him about the need, Jesus healed her. Jesus responded to the need he heard and saw to do good as he went about his daily work. Well, that was going through my mind as I got back in the car at that gas station with Melissa. And remember how I mentioned to Melissa that the man didn't seem to know how the spare tire works in that kind of car by lowering it to the ground from the inside? And that I wondered if I should help him. Well, as I said that to Melissa, I wonder if I should help this guy. I started the car and just began to drive away. Just drove away. Except I had to drive right past him to get out the parking lot. Oh, and as I drove past him, I began to remember something. I remembered something Bishop Job had said in his book. He said, "My desire to do good isn't limited by the thoughts and actions of others." Now, I remembered it because as I saw the man and drove past him, something told me to stop and ask if he needed help. I mean, that man looked absolutely exhausted and frustrated, laying on his back in a BP parking lot. And as I drove past, it's like a voice said, "You've got to stop. You got to ask him." But see, I began to argue with myself. I mean, I said, you know, men don't like to admit they need help. And he hasn't asked for help. So if I ask him if he needs help, he might be offended. He might get angry. But as I argued with myself, that nudging got more intense, and that's when I remembered what Bishop Job had said. But he said, "My desire to do good is not limited by the thoughts and actions of others. My desire to do good is in response to God's invitation to follow Jesus. And it's in my control. My desire to do good is in response to God's invitation to follow Jesus. And that response is in my control." Okay. I guess it doesn't matter if he rejects my offer or not. It doesn't matter if he gets angry. I can't control how he reacts. All I can control is what I do in this situation. All that matters is whether I'm responsive to the need that is staring me in the face. I give. So I went over and asked if I could help. The man just says, "Well, the spare tire just seems jammed on. I can't get it off." And I said, "Well, my car is something like yours, and my guess is that you have to lower the spare tire from the inside." And he didn't know about that, and I showed him about it, and you know, we put the lug wrench in that socket and just spun it down to the ground, and then we took the spare tire off. Now, all the while this is going on, folks are continuing to walk in and out of the BP station. People are coming and going from the gas pumps, and those four young, strong men are standing literally 5 feet away. They seem not to take any notice at all of this man struggling and us doing that together. But then it came time to take the lug nuts off that car. I don't know who put them on, but I couldn't get them off. Now, I'm not a small guy, but I couldn't get them to budge. I couldn't get even one of those lug nuts to break. I could not get one of them loose, not one. Struggling with it, and those four young men were looking at us, and finally, the biggest one of the bunch, who was much bigger than me, says, "You need some help?" "Yes, please. We need help." So this big guy comes over and he takes that lug wrench, puts it on the first, and I mean this guy gave it a mighty push. And it took everything this guy had. I felt much better. It took everything this guy had to push that lug wrench down, and finally got the first one to pop. And then the second, then the third, then the fourth, and then the fifth. He took them all off. Then he took the tire off. And he put the spare tire on, and he put the lug nuts back on the spare. And he did it right, by the way. You know, he did the star thing. He did it right. Finished the job for us, lowered it back down to the ground. And the man thanked him, and I thanked him. And then the man who we were helping said he was kind of apologetic. He was a little embarrassed, and he said that he was sorry to have been such a trouble to all of us. And I just said, "No, that's fine. That's just what neighbors do." And the young man smiled and said he was happy to help. And you could tell by the smile on his face, he was happy to help. And I introduced myself to everyone there. And I gave the man my business card, invited him to come to church if he was ever interested. And then we all got back into our cars and we all drove away. Melissa and I drove away and we went to the church, came over here to the office to get the book I needed. And shall I tell you the name of the book that I needed to get? That's it right there. If you don't believe me, ask Melissa. I needed my copy of the Three Simple Rules, and here's why. I have struggled with this sermon all week long. I literally rewrote the entire thing three times because I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get it. I couldn't communicate what I thought God was trying to tell me to say. I couldn't get it. And what dawned on me, actually, was that I was just trying to make it too complicated, trying to take this teaching and make it way too hard. I needed additional inspiration, so I wanted to read that little book all over again, especially the chapter titled, Do Good. But you know when the sermon finally came to me? I mean, it came to me in a flash. I saw it all at once. Do you know when the sermon finally came to me? It was the moment I got out of my car and asked that man if he needed help. I mean, it was right at that moment. I mean, it was all in my head, the entire sermon from beginning to end, right then. That's when it became clear. Doing all the good you can is not a matter of adding tasks to your already crowded to-do list in your life. Doing all the good we can, in all the places and all the ways, by all the means, to all the people, at all the times, is a matter of developing a lifestyle of responding to needs as we go about our daily life. And that's what this teaching is about. Doing all the good we can, hear this again, is a matter of developing a lifestyle of responding to the need we see as we go about our daily lives. See, responding to the need we see is really about living in the Spirit. We began the message series a few weeks ago by looking at Galatians 5. And Paul talks about life in one of two ways. We kind of either live in the flesh, that's living down to our worst self, or we live life in the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, that is rising up to our best self in Jesus Christ. We have those kind of two ways. And developing this lifestyle of responding to the need we see is really a matter of living up to our best self, living life in the Spirit. Because one of the things that we have to do in life to be able to do this is to develop a lifestyle of opening our eyes and our ears to the cry of help from people, whether they voice that cry or not. The truth is, opportunities to do good are around us all the time. But we don't have the eyes to see them, and we don't have the ears to hear it. All those people streaming in and out of the BP that day, all the folks coming in and out of the gas station, didn't have the eyes to see or the ears to hear the desperation and frustration of that guy. Responding to the need we see is an example of living in the Spirit, living up to our best self in Jesus Christ. And you know, that's really what Jesus was doing himself. Right? That's how Jesus went about his life, as he was gathering disciples, even on his way to the cross, even on his way to his crucifixion. Jesus' eyes and ears are open to the cry of need and the frustration and the fatigue of the people around him. Even on his way to the cross, he still was scanning, constantly looking in the marketplace, along the road, in the crowd, for those who need his healing touch. And he responded to this need he saw in them. Now, I'm going to admit, now there are times when we can't help. I mean, there just are. There's times when there's nothing we can do. We might not know how to help. We might not have the resources to help. I mean, trying to help might cause more harm than good. That's true. Of course, sometimes we just can't help. That's true. But that is not the issue for us as disciples of Jesus Christ. Just because there might be a time, sometime, when we can't do good in a situation doesn't mean that we reject the whole thing. That's not the issue for us. The real issue is whether we are willing to live in the Spirit and develop a lifestyle of responding to the need we see. The last thing that man we helped said to us as we got into our cars, he said, I sure wish I could buy you guys a beer. And I said, that's okay. We're happy to help a neighbor. And the young man nodded. And it was just about that time that I could have sworn I heard somebody somewhere say, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your master. And besides, who needs a beer when you know that you've pleased God? Would you stand for the blessing? Developing a lifestyle of opening our eyes and ears to the need that is all around us all the time. That's what Jesus asks. That's what this rule is all about. Living life in the Spirit and developing a lifestyle of responding to the need we see. But it takes God's work in our life. It takes God's power to pull it off. And so, go forth in the power and grace and love of God to open your eyes and ears to see and hear the need that surrounds us every day. Go in God's grace to do all the good you can. Amen.